This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. The Arizona Cardinals side from the USA Today NFL Wire. My co-host is, as is typically the case, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and this is episode 320. As we have our first reaction to the preseason, the Cardinals played their first preseason game last weekend on Friday, defeating the Dallas Cowboys 19-16, thanks to a couple of Matt Prater field goals, two Matt Prater field goals in the final 2 minutes of the game. But the end result, obviously, we're not going to talk about how great the game was, but we're going to react to the good and the bad. What was the good from that game? What was the negatives that we got from that game? And then we're going to talk about individual players. Who needs to be better? And then since the Cardinals play the Chiefs this weekend on Friday night at State Farm Stadium, we will get into that game and what we want to see there. Seth, for you, as we get started talking about the positives from the game, what were your major positives in that outcome, or whether it be the outcome or the process?
You know, I think the first positive, one of the guys we talked about before the show was Zaven Collins, or before the game on last week's show. And Zaven came out and he didn't play much and he made one big play. And that's really all we wanted to see, right? We just wanted to see that he was going to be competent, active. He showed that in his very limited time. And I really think that's all fans cared about, was to see him come out and put something positive on tape early. I think from there, the biggest positive of this game has to be at least, I'll say most of the draft class. The 2021 draft class looked absolutely phenomenal. And I know it's preseason game one, but you look like you have three guys that are 100% ready to contribute right now from Zaven, Rondale Moore. But then Marco Wilson was just, he looks like he's got a chance to be the real deal. And if you get a corner that has that effect on the team in round four of the NFL draft, that's a home run of a draft. I think, you know, there were a lot of positives to come out of this. We probably spend half the show talking about it, but initially the rookies in this draft class were the first thing that really jumped out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that Zaven Collins made a splash play in his limited time, getting a tackle for a block, especially so, and it was particularly notable because the knock on Zaven is his play against the run. We know that Simmons and Collins are going to be very good in coverage with their athleticism and their size and their length. The question is how well they will hold up against the run, how quickly can they get downhill, and to see, you know, on the second play of the game, Collins to get inside into the backfield and make a tackle for loss of two. There wasn't much. Again, let's see, if you look at, he looked competent out there the other times, but that's exactly what you wanted to see. Rondale Moore, you look at the yards, I think it was 39 yards on five touches, which is, I mean, it's not game-changing by any means, but it looked like he was a game-changer out there. I think my favorite observation that I saw on social media was that of Kyle Odegaard, who worked for the Cardinals up until a couple weeks ago. And he took a different job with a different, he's going to be right about sports betting. You guys listening to the show know who Kyle Odegaard is. And it made it look like the issues that the Cardinals had with the horizontal part of their offense that didn't seem to get any respect, those problems might go away because Moore seems to be game-changing in that sense. Like, his 5- and 6- and 7-yard gains were electric 8 yards, where you know that one of those is going to bust open. And maybe, this is the effect of when you finally can move on from a star like Larry Fitzgerald, who, you know, a wide receiver screen to a guy who's 37 years old is not the same as a wide receiver screen to a 24-year-old with a 4.3 speed.
Right, and that's the thing when you look at Moore, he's going to bring, you nailed it, he's going to bring more to the horizontal game. And the people lamenting the screen game or the bubble screens or the quick passes to last year or as part of Cliff's offense, what they don't understand is, and I get it, they weren't working, so don't call them. I get that. But it's part of opening up the rest of the offense. And think about it. 8 yards a touch without their top two receivers and their starting quarterback. That should be exciting because you're talking about you're not going to be able, if you're manufacturing touches for Rondale Moore, you're not going to be able to key on a guy like DeAndre Hopkins. Or if you do key on a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, you're putting
Rondale Moore in space
against linebackers and safeties. Like, that's a dream. And so that's kind of been what you and I have discussed, is that Andy Isabella, and we can talk about that later on, but Andy Isabella was just so terribly miscast from the beginning. People wanted him to be Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, this kind of dynamic slot receiver. He didn't play in the slot at UMass. He was an outside, you know, X receiver. Now the issues are a completely different thing, but he just was never going to be that guy. Rondale Moore has always been a true slot guy. I don't want to say gadget guy, because that I feel like that reduces what his ability is, but that's who he is. He's a guy in the Tyreek Hill mold where you can put him anywhere, whether it's outside, inside, in the backfield, motion him into the backfield, and you get him the ball in his hands with a running start, and you're going to get 3 or 4 yards. And the Cardinals just lack that.
Yeah, and you look, if they got guys on the roster that were supposed to do that, Christian Kirk doesn't have the blazing speed, but is supposed to have the elusiveness to do that. And Isabella just never has, and they were insistent from day one that they saw him as a developmental slot guy who could become. But here's, Moore is that guy already. So what they wanted Andy Isabella to be, it appears what? Rondale Moore is from day one, and which really puts them in a weird situation with Isabella, because now what do you do with him? And which leads to other discussions that we have, is that, and they seem to really still like him, but we really haven't seen him necessarily win from the outside. I mean, he's got the speed to do it, but it just feels like ultimately that pick, you're like, oh, it's just, what could it have been? When they really pushed him to be an inside guy, which meant he didn't play his rookie year. And now they're like, it's funny because they've always, now they're very, yeah, he plays more, he's a more of an outside guy, he can play both. Oh, he finally figured that out. He finally figured that out. And
right.
And maybe it's a year too late, however that goes. But obviously, but the positive is, oh my gosh, Rondale Moore is going to be fun to watch, and it's going to be hard to keep him off the field. And that's the part that's going to be interesting to see how they use him. Is, well, one, they, like, obviously you're not taking Hopkins off the field. AJ Green has been fantastic. Christian Kirk showed, like, Christian Kirk kind of showed everyone in that game with that big catch, not just that big catch, but that circus catch. Like, he was a Larry Fitzgerald type one-handed haul in. he was making people forget or remember what everyone kind of hoped he would be. Like, he's become like the invisible man, and this is a team that still really believes in Christian Kirk, whether they're going to bring him back on a you know, that second deal. They still, and the guys in the receiver room, the guys on the offense, they talk about Christian Kirk in the same, like, they mention D-Hop, and they mention C-Kirk. And so, I thought that was very, because it was just a reminder of the type of player he is, and now the fact that, well, one, you've got DeAndre Hopkins, who is the best, and if A.J. Green can continue to be what he's looked like in camp, that's going to be such a hard passing offense to defend.
It will be. And that's, you know, that's one of the exciting things. And I think that rolls into the second thing that you liked, or another big positive from this game, was how good Colt McCoy looked as the backup quarterback. You know, say what you want about Chris Streveler, his ability to run, his ability to do things off time. When you watched McCoy, there was a calmness. There was a positivity, I guess is the best way to put it, about him being out there. It was almost like, hey, we're not going to miss a step.
That we're going to be all right. And that, which is what you want from the backup. If they have to step in for a game to finish the game. I felt like, you know, 2 years ago in 2019, you kind of got that vibe from Brett Hundley, but for whatever reason, Chris Streveler was clearly the backup last year. But with a team like this, that's kind of what you want. Where if you're in a scenario where you need a backup, Colt McCoy is really kind of a fantastic guy to have, because he's been in the league for so long.
He's seen almost everything. Yeah,
and he's not going to blow you away, but he's
competent enough to keep you going. Yeah.
And he's a guy who's been at the pinnacle, because like he was, like as Cliff Kingsbury calls him, he was the king of Texas in college. And
the craziest thing, and these are obviously what ifs, and this isn't a Colt McCoy podcast, so we're going to go heavy into this, but I mean, he's literally a shoulder injury away in the national championship game from probably changing the course of college football history. Because I mean, Nick Saban's first national championship. And I don't know if he wins that national championship if Colt McCoy is healthy. That's how good of a quarterback he was. And then that shoulder injury, you could just tell that shoulder never got back to where it was before. And it's not that he's, you know, a bad quarterback by any means, but it's changed who he was as a quarterback and the throws he can make as a quarterback. And so, yeah, I mean, you look at him, he is a guy that looks like the perfect backup, you know, for the Arizona Cardinals and Kyler Murray and what they need.
Exactly. And so that was good to see. I was actually thrilled to see how Streveler did, especially with the end. We got to saw some athleticism. The offensive line in front of him kind of struggled, and so he didn't always have the chance. And let's be honest, preseason, what's hard is you're not game planning for the defense, and so you kind of have to while everyone is playing vanilla, except for when it was the Oakland Raiders in Kyler Murray's rookie preseason, and they were throwing every blitz out there just to kind of prove a point about the Cardinals' soft, you know, little boy offense. They're not doing a whole lot, but it does make a quarterback to kind of react on the go, because you haven't schemed for it. And so to see him scrap and especially go down after they had lost the lead and fallen behind, to have him put them in two clutch scenarios, which would have, you know, you're like, well, if he could have just done that in week 17 last year, granted, he wasn't doing it against third teamers.
Third teamers, yeah. You know, I think you had to be happy about what you saw from Josh Jones playing right guard. He looks not just competent, but like a guy that can do that position. Whether or not the Cardinals decide that that's where he's going to play, different conversation, but at least you didn't come out of the game going, oh, wow, there you have a hole at right guard, or, you know, Justin Murray or Brian Winters need to get healthy quick. And so, you know, those are the big things I think you take away from it. Because, like I said, there's a lot of positives from this game. I thought, you know, Tay Gowan had flashed some good things. But I think the biggest positive, and you and I had talked about this off the air, and this isn't a positive for anybody, but really the aesthetics of the team and the fans, and that's watching Matt Prater kick a game-winning field goal from 50 yards. I mean, to consistently make 45 to 55-yard field goals, and I get it was a preseason game, but that's, I mean, literally we're talking about the difference between the Arizona Cardinals being in the playoffs last year and us, you know, questioning whether Cliff's on the hot seat, you know,
right,
and all of this stuff. I mean, that's literally the difference. And that's not to say that Prater's not going to miss field goals or, you know, things of that nature. But I think in game one of the preseason, when that was such a big issue last year, it definitely makes you feel better.
Right. Right. I mean, Zane Gonzalez, for what he did, he was nails until you were kicking in the 40s. Especially in the clutch. Like, we know. Now, granted, we questioned the decision of Cliff Kingsbury against Miami, but Zane missed a field goal that would have tied the game. He missed the game-winning field goal against the Patriots. He missed a game-winning field goal against the Seattle Seahawks in regulation. Luckily, he, you know, thanks to Isaiah Simmons, he was able to redeem himself and kick the game winner in overtime. But, you know, he cost the game team one win and potentially another one, because that the other one was just to but, and it got to the point where no one as a fan was confident. Like, you worried, or like, oh, we're putting in Zane. And that's the thing, to for just week one in the preseason, when, you know, that's the time it's like, oh, it's preseason, you missed a kick. But to come in, and there was no doubt, and he did it twice. It was a 48-yarder and a 47-yarder, both in the last 2 minutes. That's exactly, like, that's why they signed Matt Prater. Not to win it in the preseason, but those particular kicks are why Prater is the kicker for the Cardinals this year, not Zane Gonzalez, because that's what he's done his entire career. And to do it in the first week, even in the preseason, it's like, yes, okay. If that happens in week one against the Titans, no one's going to be like, oh, I hope. The fans should feel like, we're going to win. We're going to win. Because you got Prater coming out there to kick a game-winning field goal. And an interesting fact, Prater has ended the last two games he has played in State Farm Stadium with game-winning field goals. Because, you know, obviously the last time he played there at the stadium was when the Lions beat the Cardinals 29-26 when he hit a game-winning field goal as time expired.
Yeah, and so I just think you're going to look at, and that is, you know, one of the big positives coming out of this, is that you've got test number one. And like I said, we know it's not for realsies, but test number one, you feel confident about.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the way. Let's move on. Let's talk some about the negatives, because not everything was great. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best era of Cardinals talk on the web. The negatives from the game. Not everything was great. And in terms of the preseason, obviously this is more about individuals. And like on the positives, Marco Wilson, oh, you mentioned him. That was so good to see the plays he was making and to know that, okay, he's not going to have to play this year. But if he does, maybe it won't be as bad as we think, because, yeah, he's got the tools. But the negatives. I want to point out one player, and it was really untimely for him. It was less than a week after Sean Cooler came out and called him the most improved lineman on the team, that, you know, in his third year, he's right there ready to play. And then Josh Myles came out and struggled. Now, Grant, I will say, Dallas does have some very talented young edge players like Osei Odigizua. He's a guy I love. Like, I coming out of UCLA, I was like, he's impactful. Myles really had a hard time against him. And so it just, the timing was rough. But in this case, and I think he's still on track to make the team because I don't think that they're going to have a better tackle option. Like, that, obviously, Josh Jones is a possibility, but I don't think they have a better, like, true left tackle option on the roster than with Myles, especially they really like what his potential can be. But you wish he would have flashed a little bit after the comments that Kugler made, because now if for some reason DJ Humphreys gets hurt, and I don't think Josh Jones has had any left tackle reps since he was drafted. I think it's all been right tackle and now more right guard. You don't feel good about the guy stepping in for Humphreys if that's the case.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that makes me wonder about what their plan is with Justin Murray, right? Because that's been kind of his role for so long, and then Josh Jones, you know, we've talked about it, and the conversation of, well, Josh Myles is the guy, you know, blah blah blah, and then he comes out and just looks not good.
that was rough. I think of everyone on that team, he had the worst night.
Right, and that's the thing, is like, it changes your perception of what they can do on the offensive line, because instead of it being about three guys battling for the right guard spot or two guys battling for the right guard spot, whatever it is, now you're saying, okay, well, do Justin Murray or Josh Jones have to move back to be that backup swing guy? Like, you know, what is the answer at left tackle if Hump has to miss a game? Because right now you don't feel comfortable with Joshua Myles, and so that's the unfortunate thing. It's one game though, so I mean, obviously we'll be paying attention, but yeah, it was one bad game.
It was another player that. And I think for, you know what we didn't talk about, which was kind of the story. Yeah, we need to kind of bounce back to the positives. You know, Benjamin, so good. But Will's was like, I think he locked up a spot on the team, but we can't talk about that now. Well, maybe that's what we can talk about. We want to see, you know, stack a game like that. But
right,
I thought that the receivers could have had a better game. So there were moments. Obviously, Rondale Moore had a very good game. I mean, it's just the impact that he had in a short amount of time. Christian Kirk, he had that great play as well. But then you look at other ones. Greg Dortch, he might be a sneaky find himself on the roster guy. But JoJo Ward, no longer on the team now. He got cut. You know, he didn't look good. Keyshawn dropped another pass in traffic, but they like him. Andy Isabella was unable to play and won't be able to play this week because he's on the COVID list, and that's a different type of negative. But the other receivers, no one kind of really stood out. I mean, you've got Andre Bocellia, super fast, Rico Gafford, super fast, but you didn't look at them and you go, you really got nothing out of them. There was nothing that kind of stood out in the passing game outside of a couple of big plays.
Yeah, and, you know, when you look at the fight that there kind of is right there, Dortch is an interesting guy because of his return capabilities, and he seemed to do a good job with it. And after, you know, kind of going back to what we talked about at the beginning, Rondale Moore, you wonder if they aren't looking at things and going, oh, maybe we'd prefer not to have Rondale return kicks and punts, right?
Yeah, like, and it's like that, like they know what he can do.
So, like, but, if they need it every once in a while,
yeah, that he's the specialist, the punt return specialist for big moments,
right? Right, but you know, so I think that was a big thing. I thought Eno returning kicks was big. Average 28 yards a kickoff return. That was big because what's the kid's name? Bacchelia. Yeah, he, you know, obviously he only returned one, but he didn't do a great job with
and
it.
And got leveled. Now, granted, yeah. He's a little guy. So he's, yeah, he is. You don't want him getting hit.
Yeah, he is. And so that's the thing, is you look at it, you know, does Dortch put pressure on a guy like Andy Isabella, as we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, because he's not able to go out there and play, but then Dortch also is offering that special teams ability that we haven't seen from Andy, you know, through his first two seasons. You know, or is it maybe something with Keyshawn? Like, I just, you know, you're putting names out there, but those are the type of decisions that you start to look at. You know, I think the other kind of disappointing thing was I thought Jace Whitaker, he just looked out of place. It's not that he's a bad cornerback by any means. I just don't see him a spot for him, or that he stood out like you said Marco Wilson and Tay Gowan did.
Yeah, no, and Whitaker is an interesting case because I think he's going to end up with the same role that he had last year, and that's going to be the practice. He's going to be on the practice squad, get called up because of special teams. Like we saw, like unfortunately, the Miami game was bad, and Jace Whitaker was in a mix and all that. But when you end up with Devondre Bosby and Jace Whitaker as your cornerbacks, you're not in a good place. And Whitaker, though he shows, like, here's the thing. There's two things that he offers as a positive. One, it's positional versatility because he can play inside out and his play on special teams. But if you end up with a guy like Jace Whitaker on the field, you're gonna worry.
Right, exactly. And that's not to say anything negative about him. I just think that's just, you know, again, when we talk about slight negatives from the game,
yeah,
those are two of the ones that kind of came out more than anything else. But yeah, I mean, I think overall, I think the positives clearly outweighed the negatives, and then there's always the biggest positive, and we won't even mention it, but, you know, that's that. Everybody's playing this week again, so
yeah. And I will say that I wished I had seen a little more from Jonathan Ward, especially the way they talked about him. So what was it, I think Dave Pasch who said on one of his I think he was talking on Arizona Sports, said, you know, one of the things with last season is that Jonathan Ward never would have been a guy they could have hit on the practice squad last year because of the pandemic. But we didn't see anything from him because he looked like Kenyon Drake in terms of his running style, which, while I defended Kenyon Drake, Ward didn't look dynamic at all.
Yeah, and that makes it tough when you look at how Eno ran in the game and how quick he looked. I know we haven't seen Eno play since he was at ASU, but I will say he looked leaner. He looked quicker. He looked more decisive as a runner than when he was at ASU. And obviously at ASU, he was carrying the ball a lot. And so probably a year off was the best things that could have happened to his career for his legs, right? Like, because now he looked quick and decisive. And like you said, Ward just did not at all.
Anyone else in terms of other negatives? I think the two things, well, Ward, he injured his ankle or something. Yeah, he injured his ankle, and Chris Banjo. I mean, that's gonna, like, I think he's a guy that's kind of a lock for the roster because of the leadership factor and special teams, but that's a very deep safety room. It's gonna be hard to keep everyone in terms of that. And I think it was good because in overall the health, they came out good. But not obviously not there. I did, aside from some of those young players, I wished that there would have been more players have moments, and we didn't get many moments from players. Other than, you know, Rondell flashed. You had the play by Zaven. Streveler had that run, and then Marco Wilson looked flashed, and you know, of the others. But we didn't get more. Like, we didn't get more individual moments. It was just a bunch of guys out there playing football and not messing it up too much.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was what we talked about. It was going to be boring, but it was, it showed us some of the things we wanted to see, and that I think was one of the bigger things for week one.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk in Louisville. Let's move on to our next topic, in the which we will talk about who needs to play better. Who needs to play better in this next preseason game, or who needs to continue to play well. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. So we have talked about some of the players who were there, some of the negatives. Obviously, as we look in at the Chiefs game this weekend, it'll be on ESPN. So we actually will get a little bit of Murray versus Mahomes, it sounds like. But ultimately, the team results don't matter much because they're not scheming for each other. It's about individual evaluation. The game doesn't really count, even though it's meaningful. So that, I kind of echoing what Cliff Kingsbury said. So who are the players who need to play better or need to maintain and at least not regress to continue? And I think number one, Josh Myles, we want to see more from him. He needs to do better this time around because two bad games in a row will not go well for him.
Yeah, and that's going to be a big ask this week for him to bounce back and kind of show that he can be one of the guys. I think you want to see a little more from the tight end room in general. We haven't really talked about them. I don't think we need too much. Health is one of the big things, but I think you want to see a little bit more from that room, because outside of Max Williams, we're kind of just waiting to see if anybody's going to overtake Darrell Daniels, because you know if he's your tight end too, that this room needs work, right?
Right, and then they like Darrell, but...
Right, but he's your tight end three or four.
Right.
Like, that's the guy you want coming in for a couple plays or you know, working specials, you know, things of that nature. You know, when you look at it, I think you want to see a little more from the defensive front this week. Again, they weren't bad by any means.
Well, and last week was almost a joke in that sense, because literally no one that we expect to make the roster played, because there was... Right. There was no Jordan Phillips. There was no J.J. Watt. There was no Rashard Lawrence. There was no Leckie Fotu. There was no Zach Allen. There was no Corey Peters. And so Michael Dogby is the only guy that you think might. And then a bunch of guys that they signed recently, Josh Morrow, Jack Crawford, Marcus Hunt, guys who've played in the league but ultimately were unemployed. They were on the streets in the middle of August. And so, yeah, I don't know what we could have expected from that group.
That, yeah, and I think that's fair. But I think overall, when you look at who needs to play better this week, there's not a whole lot. I mean, like you said, Josh Myles. I think you want to see more from the return game, guys that are getting chances. And I think for that matter, you want to see Eno keep up his pace of play.
Yes.
He's not going to average 10 yards per carry. That's just, not going to happen.
That's crazy.
But even if it's, you know, even if it's five carries for 35 yards, I think you're extremely happy about that. I think with Rondell Moore, same type of thing. You want to see that continue to grow and fester in a positive way. You know, I think obviously we're very, very hopeful about Tae Gowan and Marco Wilson. They're unlikely to get a huge test this week, but the Chiefs have a little bit of depth at wide receiver, so they can, you know, they can give them a little push. But for the most part, I think the big things you want to see and who needs to play better or maintain kind of what they have done or continue on are, you know, the guys we talked about being the one, the positives. And for this rookie class to, if you have basically two starters in Zaven and Rondell, and then you have a Marco Wilson who can contribute when called upon, that, I mean, and then you think about Rodney Hudson as the third round pick. I mean, my goodness, that's easily Steve Keim's best draft class.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to see some special teams flashes. We got a lot of special teams play from guys like Evan Weaver, you know, Benjamin played on special teams, James Wiggins, Sean Williams. I'm interested to see how that rotation goes this week, because we know that the roles on special teams do impact roster decisions, especially at the back end. I do say that there's, and he probably is a lock for the roster, but Keyshawn Johnson needs to do more, especially when he's not against starters, because what in the world is that? I think he's got to be able to make contested catches. I know he's real tight with Kyler, and he is their backup X. And so it's going to be interesting to see if he can bounce back and do something, because I felt like after his rookie preseason, he really hasn't flashed at all since then.
Yeah, and that's, again, that's what the danger of the you know, kind of shortness of the preseason can be, and what makes you want to see the continued development and those guys to push forward week to week, as opposed to having, like you said, that flash and then disappear. Because as much as the preseason doesn't matter, like we just talked about how kind of boring and mundane that Cowboys game was, I mean, I can't imagine what it was like in the press box. It had to be a lot to just watch. I mean, I know it's fun that football's back, but there was just so few big plays, and that's just like, and then the game seemed to go forever. Did it not?
It did. It was late at night, you know, on a 7 o'clock kickoff. You don't get home till like 1 a.m. So this week, 5 o'clock kickoff, which is better. I'll get home at a decent hour.
And so that's, you know, and that's the thing. So to your point, like, you want to continue to see the growth of players week to week, and not just a week flash and then kind of missing out on them. I would also, I mean, I think the last thing, who needs to play better, I think you want to see the continued kind of, I know there's really not a battle, but the continued quarterback battle that we saw at least in week one, where both quarterbacks put forth their best foot. And I think that's an important thing as well.
Well, absolutely. And especially for Chris Trevlin, it's going to be, I don't know how they keep him on the roster. But especially with the other position, I think you're going to have to stack some players. But they really believe in Strebler's talent and his future as a quarterback. I don't know if they think that he can be like a starter, but Colt McCoy is clearly the best option as a backup. But how much competition Chris Trevor can get, and to show that he can play at this level, we saw the physicality, we saw the grit. It'd be good to see, be able to see him make some nice throws and have the time to do it.
Yeah, and that's the thing too with Shreveler, that it's been tough. He doesn't seem to make throws consistently. And so he I don't want to say takes the easy way out, because trust me, running through there is not the easy way. But he seems to trust his legs and ability to get yards in that general way more than, you know, throwing the ball. And as we saw, that's not something you can do consistently if in the NFL, especially against fast attacking defenses like the Rams.
Now, this is, we're going to kind of change up the last topic, because we could kind of end up talking about what we want to see versus the Chiefs this week. But coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's finish things up talking about, well, rather than just the Chiefs game, what do we want to see for the rest of the preseason and camp? What do we want to see there? That's coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. So we talked a little bit about who needs to bounce back, what we want to see against the Chiefs this week. But what do we want to see overall? What do we want to see from the Cardinals overall before the end of the preseason? Give me something that you want to see. I'll start. I do want to see, in the limited amount of time that Cliff has his starters out on the field, I want it to look goodish with Kyler Murray. I know that they purposely keep things easy, but like, give us a taste. Just give us a taste. I want a little bit of a taste of what Kyler's going to be in this offense. But I fear that they're not going to have, like, Hop or A.J. Green on the field, which really changes what the passing offense looks like.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair thing to ask for. You know, we won't see the rushing attack, obviously. We're not going to see Kyler run in the preseason, which is understandable. But I think, as you said, you want to see the diversity of the offense come into play. I think you want to see the weaponry that they have. And I get that we're probably not, like you said, not going to see DeAndre Hopkins. You're not going to see A.J. Green. But I think even with Andy Isabella, who won't play this week, obviously, with the positive COVID. But with Andy Isabella, Christian Kirk, Rondell Moore, I think that's a lot of weapons when you add in Chase Edmonds and James Conner. So I do think we'll have enough to maybe get a good series or two. And that's really all you want to see, right? Like, you want to see, like you said, Christmas and maybe some explosiveness. But I think more than anything, you just want to see them move the ball without it seeming like a struggle or Kyler's legs having to bail them out. Because, I mean, that's the thing. Kyler's legs are going to bail them out a bunch this season. There's no doubt in our minds whatsoever. But let's see if this offense can be a good offense without that as well. Because that's the thing, is if it can do that, if it can make plays without Kyler's legs, then when you add Kyler's legs in, it's just going to be that much better.
Exactly. Honestly, I want, here's the thing. We don't know the severity or exactly what the injuries are, because they've kept them under wraps. I want to just get them out of the preseason healthy. Chandler Jones isn't going to play this week, which means he's not going to play in the preseason. J.J. Watt not practicing. Jordan Phillips, I'm worried about Jordan Phillips, because I don't know if it's a hamstring. And if it's a hamstring, I'm concerned that it's going to become chronic for him. But my goodness, can we just get to the finish line and stay healthy? I don't want that to be the reason, to lament what happened to the season.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing, is, you know, we didn't expect J.J. Watt to play much, if at all, during the preseason. It's clear that he's just not going to play during the preseason, which is, you know, whatever. But I think the other ones, like you said, like the A.J. Greens, the Jordan Phillips, guys that have had long histories of maybe injuries, or, you know, are coming off an injury plagued season, to then come right into more injury pluggedness, I guess you would say, is disappointing and kind of disheartening.
Anything else that we want to see in this preseason?
Yeah, I'd like to see a little bit from the running backs. I know Chase Edmonds, you know, didn't get a ton of burn this last game. And obviously James Conner was on the COVID list, but I'd like to see a little more from the running backs this week that aren't Eno Benjamin, because I don't think you and I expect a ton from Eno this year.
Nope.
But we'd like to see a little more from what they, you know, these other ones.
Right. And I just would love to see, players separating themselves, because it makes it easier for us to kind of get a clue, so that when the rosters are built, we're like, wait, why? We want, as fans and as analysts, you want players to stand out. You want those guys that make create a buzz, like a Cap or Vontarius Dora, or those every year receivers that seem to pop up. And, you know, maybe that guy's Greg Dortch. But I want someone unexpected to step up, because that makes the preseason fun.
Yeah, and I think Dortch is the leading candidate right now. And that, like you said, that makes it fun. Although, you know, I mean, we've got to be excited. And I know you're trying to temper your expectations, and you don't want to come off as the ASU homer. But I think Eno looked really good.
He did.
As a runner and a return man. And that's, I mean, those are two things that they're going to need. You know, there's nothing really else. That's the problem with how little the veterans are playing. There's not much you can ask for. Because, I mean, to continue to see splashes from Zaven Collins and his limited work, maybe a splash from Isaiah Simmons this week wouldn't be the worst thing. But, I mean, for the most part, you're talking about let's get out of this healthy and get to the regular season so we can see this team that we've been excited to see constructed, or, you know, that was constructed, that we're excited to see finally on the field together. Because that's been what the problem is we're not going to see it at all. It seems like, I mean, literally during training camp, they'll never have all their guys out there.
Because I know.
Watt didn't even make it out of the running test. So. And you're still not going to convince me that that wasn't on purpose. So.
You know, I really feel that it kind of was. So maybe he did have a slight tweak, but I think that it feels like that was a plan. And I think...
I just hope they don't kick themselves if they start, you know, two, 1-4... and then finish up at a strong like 9-8, but miss the playoffs.
Yeah. Watch next week when they move back to Tempe.
Oh yeah, the guys will be out there practicing.
That Watt doesn't come off PUP then.
Yeah, exactly.
And let's not have Chandler Jones get hurt. So something happened in practice on Monday.
They said it's not serious.
But he's not going to play. And, well, poor David Brandt, who works for the Associated Press, got a slight scolding from Cliff Kingsbury, because he asked, is like, we saw Chandler go down. Is there anything with that? And he's like, you mean during the closed part of practice? So, yeah, they're not going to give anything. He was clearly annoyed. I'm like, oh, I was watching the presser after. They're like, oh, David. But, I mean, it's unfair. Because I'm like, it's kind of unfair from that. Like, it's a little soapbox here, and there was a discussion that I was hearing among other reporters, because there's close part of practice, which means it's like we're not there. But if we see something, if there is like a Teddy Bridgewater type injury, we technically couldn't ask. We would have to ask. So anything happen, we couldn't say what happened to Teddy or how serious his injury, because you have to bring it up. Can you? Like, you follow the team rules, but then at the same time, you have to get that sort of news out. So it's a dual-edged sword in that situation. I know that's something you probably none of y'all care about, but it does. It is an interesting factor that enters into this world of sports reporting. We'll be back. We'll go ahead and wrap this thing up. Hey, it's under an hour again, so we'll probably get back to those hour and a half shows once the season starts. Seth, how about we, even though it will be before their last preseason game, and then the next time that we record, we will already know the Raw Final 53. So why don't we, even before the final preseason game, put together we'll react to the show, we're back to the game, that is, and kind of make our predictions for the Final 53. Now, if you're watching our sites already, Cards Wire and Revenge of the Birds, I know I've been writing a roster prediction after each game based on each piece of information that we see and how that might change things. But we'll try and put together our Final 53 in the next show, in addition to reacting to the game versus the Chiefs, because I think what that last game against the Saints will be is a traditional fourth preseason game feel, where it will be a few guys battling for roster spots and other guys just trying to put tape out to land either on a practice squad here or elsewhere.
Yeah, and I think that sounds like a great idea.
So with that, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise of Sea Red podcast. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening. Go Cardinals.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.